Well, hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. Hope everybody's having a terrific Thursday today. It's a little, some nice sunshine, a little bit of clouds down here in Florida, staying pretty hot still for about to be October. But other than that, it's still a blessed day. And how are you doing today, Dad?
Austin, I'm doing great, and my internet signal's strong today, so hope, pray it stays strong. So, yes, we should have a good show today. In fact, what's your first story?
Well, this one involving the vaccines again, and it seems like I touch base on this a lot, but it's simply because I'm really trying to get the truth out of there and of what's really going on. But a new report now just highlights the dark aspects of the pharmaceutical and vaccine industry, essentially where a team of scientists conducted experiments on human babies, knowing full well that the vaccine had significant side effects on the test subjects, which were animals before that. Professor Pete Beverly, a former principal research fellow at Oxford University, said that researchers from the university went ahead with human baby trials of tuberculosis vaccine booster known as MVA85 that had already been tested on monkeys and was found not to work. Beverly contends that the scientists ignored concerning data that showed primates given the TB booster shot had a tendency to, and I quote, die rather rapidly, and that there was no evidence whatsoever that the inoculation even worked. They went on to explain that the experiments on the monkeys first began in 2006 and featured 18 monkeys infected with TB. Of those, just six of the monkeys were given the experimental booster shot that would later be used on infants. Of those six monkeys who were given the booster shot, five of them became unwell and died. The death rate was much lower in the group given the existing BCG vaccine, which has been around since 1921. She said it certainly looks, when you look at the rate at which these animals died, that the MVA85 boosted group and the controlled untreated group all died rather rapidly. Shortly after the monkey experiments began, the Oxford team was already looking to secure fundings for human trials featuring a staggering 2,800 human infants. According to Beverly, regulators weren't even given the results of the monkey trial. While the data was eventually shared, even regulators noted it would have been good for the material to have been presented in a more timely fashion. The human trial, which took place in South Africa, reports that the parents of the infants used in the trial were told by the scientists that the vaccine had been tested on both animals and humans already, which was a lie. Families were paid just £10, which was $13.29, to take part in the study. While the vaccine was ultimately judged to be safe, many of the infants were harmed during the process, and some died. For example, 89% of the infants given the TB jab reported local adverse events. 80% of the vaccine group also reported at least one significant adverse event. Furthermore, seven babies from the vaccine group died, but it's not just the number of reactions to the vaccine that was so concerning. On top of that, the control group also had a high number of reactions. The Oxford team did, which they've done numerous times now, I've talked about in detail, to justify the number of reactions seen in the TB group as normal. They essentially padded the control group. The group, what they did was the control group received a Candida skin test injection known as Candim. As the Candim website states, the use in pediatric populations has not been established. Candim was not tested or approved for pediatric use whatsoever. Not only did the researchers fail to use an actual placebo with no known side effects, Candida's website states there are risk of adverse reactions, period. They didn't even use a drug that was approved for use in children. This is what they've been caught doing numerous times now, is the control group that does not get the actual vaccine is given some inoculation that always has some significant adverse reaction. That way, when they look at the scale, there's very little difference in the adverse reactions between the group that actually got the tuberculosis and the control group that supposedly just got the saline shot, which was not a saline shot. But the fact that these guys tested this out on 2,800 kids, even after the monkeys died that they gave it to, boggles my mind. Again, this proves the point that the vaccine industry has absolutely zero care care for the health or well-being of the individuals that it shoots up with these toxic drugs, but what they do care about is making a substantial profit, and they know there is no recourse or long-term negative side effects that can come to them monetarily because of the Vaccine Protection Act from 1986, preventing them from being able to be sued for any reason whatsoever. So this just goes again down on top of another vaccine article this week, another reason why you really need to do your own research and look and read before you have vaccines pumped in your children, unknowing of what they're actually getting.
You know, the thing that really blows my mind on all this is, number one, they can't be sued, so it doesn't make any difference how they do these stupid tests. And even if they show complete and total negligence and fraud, it doesn't make any difference. They can't be sued. Number two, the doctors that are doing these tests and knowing the side effects of these children and knowing that they're giving them a placebo that's not even a placebo, shame on them. I mean, they know they're skewing the results. And what happens is the reactions are occurring with or without the injection of the drug or the vaccine just because of the placebo. So when they do the statistical analysis, there's no deviation. In other words, it's the same. So they say there's no bad problems associated with the vaccine. It's all a bunch of lies, Austin. Every bit of this stuff is a bunch of lies. In fact, I pull up another article today that says 10 reasons to skip the flu shot. And it said, number one, they don't work. And it's been proven over and over and over again that the flu shots they give people don't work. Number two, it's all about the money. They're pushing and making billions of dollars on flu shots. And they all contain mercury, by the way, on the multivalent flu shots. And also, immunization is a fallacy. It is no coincidence that when a child is vaccinated, he or she develops a number of symptoms, including runny nose, ear infection, and bronchitis, even pneumonia. The flu vaccine introduces the flu virus to the body, sensitizing the body to virus, lowering the immune system, and creating symptoms. There's no benefits for infants and children, certainly no benefits for pregnant women. They've now shown to massively have an increase in miscarriage because of that. And it increases the risk to those who are at risk, because folks who are around them, you have shedding of the vaccines. Then you have the hazard of the mercury toxicity, the evidence of neurological disorders with mercury, greater risk of Alzheimer's disease, multiple strains bringing multiple risks when you inject all the different strains into you at one time, and you end up with a situation where just taking vitamin C and D3K2 gives you better immunity against the flu than all these vaccinations do, Austin. So, yes, I'm glad you started the show off with that particular topic, because, again, it just shows you, if you're new to the show, then we're not going to play these games. We're going to tell you the truth about the vaccinations. This is why when that doctor the other day from, I believe it was Emory, said that the white people basically need to leave the country who are not immunizing their children, and then she goes on to say it's the white people that are well-educated, who have college degrees, who are the ones who have opted out of vaccinations, and that's why the white people should leave. Guys, it's the people that are educated who listen to shows like this, and they learn about what vaccinations do and how dangerous they are, they're the ones that are saving and protecting their family from the onslaught of this absolutely neurological trauma that you dump in your body by ingesting this much mercury via vaccines into your system. Guys, this is no good for anybody, and we need to have true science working on this stuff, Austin. And until they want to clean these vaccines up and get all these adjuvants out and prove that these things don't have these crippling side effects, I highly suggest that people never get vaccinations, period. What's your next story, bud?
No, you're absolutely right. And that's what I tell people all the time is that I said they have no obligation, guys, to produce a vaccine that works or one that's safe. And I know that's a difficult concept for a lot of people to get through your head. It really is at first, honestly, because everybody always thinks, you know, oh, vaccines, no, they do everything they can. They're tested. They're approved. They're designed to work. They only work. They have to be as safe as possible. Guys, that couldn't be any further from the truth. They do not have to be safe. They do not have to work. They do not even really have to be stringently tested. All they have to do is get a bump in the approval rating. They can skew the research studies. They can do unbelievably unscrupulous things like this, where they pad the research by using a Candida injection in the child that's not even approved for pediatrics, and all the kids have significant adverse reactions in the control group. So when they show the data to basically the approval board, they go, oh, well, everybody had reactions in it as far as the way it went, and it goes across a straight line. Okay, there's no significant, you know, statistical probability there's going to be any issues with it. We'll let it pass. They don't talk about the 7 children that died during the testing. They don't talk about the 5 monkeys that died during the testing to even get it used for on children. They don't go into any of that. Think about it like this. What if we made a law that nobody could sue a vehicle manufacturer company. Ford couldn't get sued. Chevy couldn't get sued. Toyota couldn't get sued. They couldn't get sued. Didn't matter what they did. Didn't matter what tires they put. Didn't matter how bad the seatbelts. Didn't matter how bad the airbags didn't work. They could never be sued for anything. Do you understand how bad the quality control would go on vehicles? If it didn't matter, you could be going down the interstate, your wheels fall off and the airbags blow out and you roll into a fiery mess. And you contact Twitter and they go, well, you can't sue us. Contact the federal government. Get on the list. They may be generous enough to settle with you in taxpayer funds. Don't contact us again. There's nothing we're going to do about it. It would be horrendous. Within 5 to 10 years, the vehicle industry would be completely shot because everything would be rolling pieces of crap. This is what they've done with the vaccine industry. They've literally given them a get-out-of-jail-free license to kill. Doesn't matter what they do. Doesn't matter how much aluminum they put in. Doesn't matter what toxic adjuvants like formaldehyde they put in the system. Doesn't matter. They literally have no recourse that can be given back to them. So Dad's exactly right. Until we actually have a vaccine industry that has to compete, that actually can be held accountable, that can actually be sued for hundreds of millions of dollars by each person that has a significant adverse reaction from aluminum or from mercury or from formaldehyde, none of this is going to change. And until that happens, I will never recommend vaccines at all. I got an email today about somebody that was asking us about the tetanus vaccine. Dad responded to it as far as wound care is one of the most important aspects of anything, especially keeping it, you know, without making sure the wound doesn't get infected. And the truth is, if you do decide you want to get a tetanus vaccine, you need to make sure you request from your doctor that you get the tetanus only vaccine without thimerosal in it. Most of those are usually in an ampule. They're not in a regular vial as far as with a rubber topper. They're in a single-use ampule, and they will not be with any other vaccination. It's very difficult to find that now because usually tetanus is coupled with one or two other vaccinations that they give out now in the childhood vaccination list. So if you absolutely need to get a tetanus shot and you're requiring it, then the only way I would recommend that is through a single-use ampule with no thimerosal marisol in it. But again, for a vaccine to even be needed, it needs to be a life-threatening illness. That's it. That's really what it has to be. Or extremely and highly contagious. 90% of the vaccines on the market do not fit either one of those at all, because most of them are not extremely contagious because they're not prevalent at all. They're not around whatsoever. They're completely eradicated, essentially. Or secondly, they're life-threatening. Most of the vaccines that are on the market are not for life-threatening illnesses. Chickenpox is not life-threatening. Tetanus can be life-threatening in some cases, but it's still very, very rare. So again, make your own decision on it. Read, do your research, and figure out if that the route you want to take. But man, going down this route with this 76 different vaccines that they want to give these kids over the course of their childhood is absolutely egregious to me, and I would never recommend it to anybody.
Austin, a few years ago with the Ebola that we had over in Africa, yeah, we had over 10,000 people die from Ebola. The natives in Africa, the people, the citizens who were living in some of those countries, they were actually stoning and taking and killing the aid workers who were injecting these vaccinations for Ebola into these people because entire villages were infected with Ebola after they were immunized. I mean, so they were like being told by their other village members that these guys were intentionally coming in there to kill them with Ebola. I mean, it was a massive, massive mess a few years ago when they were doing the Ebola in Africa. And suddenly, like all the other stuff that comes through the, how should I say this, the boys at Fort Detrick, it just went away. It just went away. So, I mean, guys, just be real careful with all of this stuff. By the way, I want to cover this. Steve Bannon discusses Roy Moore's victory as part of the populist nationalist conservative revolt against globalist elites who treat working class as a commodity. One of the big reasons that Strange was endorsed by Donald Trump for that Senate seat was that, of course, the incredibly staunch Democrat jihadist, not jihadist, a Shabbatist, Kushner and his wife, endorsed this Strange guy who was another one of these globalists. And Breitbart News executive Steve Bannon discussed this. And he said, Bannon described Moore's winning campaign as an outgunned, no cash, all organization. It was basically grassroots muscle versus corporate cash, and it was a blowout. 10 points, by the way. It was a blowout from the very beginning, he told Breitbart News. A caller described the defeat of Moore's opponent, Luther Strange, as a tremendous loss for Mitch McConnell, since he spent $30 million on a smear campaign to a measly $2 million and got trounced. They didn't come down here to have a debate among people, Bannon said of the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and the Senate Leadership Fund. They didn't come down here to talk about the great issues of our day. They came down here on the politics of personal destruction to destroy Judge Roy Moore and his family. Bannon said the important element of Moore's victory was refusing to take his substantial lead in the polls for granted, or conversely, to be intimidated by the enormous amount of money that was being spent against him. When I stepped in on President Trump's campaign, Bannon said, I had a very clear idea. We had 88 days ago. I think we were down 16 points. He was like 70 in the generic ballot. You've got to be at 90. They didn't have much cash, but I had a very clear idea, and I told him 100% chance of the probability would win, he recalled. That came off this radio show. It came off the comments section of Breitbart, he said. I had a very good feel for where people in the country were, simply for the fact that I've been listening to people off this show. The same thing with Judge Roy Moore. I don't think we ever doubted that Judge Moore would win, no matter how much cash was being put into it. So, guys, this is a big deal. The sad part about this is Trump is furious that the Kushners told him to endorse this failing horse, this failing candidate, because he threw his entire weight of the White House with Strange, and Strange was thoroughly defeated. Trump is compromised at this point, and I've told you guys this repeatedly. He's not doing what he said he was going to do. He's taking the globalist agenda and continuing to do so. Austin, what do you think?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what's going on. We see this with a lot of these guys now as far as their true colors, as we talked about earlier. It's really starting to come out over the last 8 to 9 months because we're really seeing what agenda they're pushing, what they're trying to do. And I did see the one thing earlier, I don't know if you know, the Trump's new tax plan looked like it actually rolled out yesterday. I was reading parts of it today, and it looks like it's changed a little bit. They're dropping the 7 brackets now down to 3 brackets. They're breaking it down to simply 12, 25, and 35. Also, too, which this is pretty good for small businesses, they're doing this now. They're saying that with small businesses, they're limiting the maximum tax rate for small businesses and family-owned businesses to 25%, which is significantly lower than the top rate of 39.6%. So small businesses are basically going to keep more of their money. And also, too, they're supposed to get rid of the death tax now. And also, too, I think they're going to increase the child tax credit for individuals that are in the 25% tax bracket. So there's a few things they're doing. I haven't gone through all of it yet. I haven't seen any really significant stuff. However, though, I did see that they're doing that as far as for the small businesses, which in my opinion, I hope that that's going to really help incentivize a lot of small mom and pop stores and small family-owned businesses like ourselves to be able to be more productive because they're not going to be taxed so incessantly like they are now with everything. So we'll see what happens with it, but unless I haven't heard anything still about the individual mandate with Obamacare, that seems to me that that's going to stay in place, which I didn't expect that to go anyway anytime soon. But so far, it looks like the tax change, it's minor in some stuff, Dad, but at least it's in the right direction. We're not seeing massive, massive tax increases like Hillary wanted to do.
That's right. Lynette Zhang had an interview that I basically watched, and I want to cover some of the stuff she talked about to cover what's going on economically and where the United States is headed. And the reason I want to cover this little article here is because I want to talk about what the banks are doing. There's a lot of talk lately about the collapse of retail with entire shopping malls closing down. The mainstream media has been calling this the Amazon effect, but we've covered this before in our show, and I'm adding this. It's not as much the Amazon effect as it's the loss of discretionary income due to Obamacare and the super high deductibles for medical stuff. Because if a person's paying $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 a year in deductibles, they don't have any money left to buy stuff off of retail stores. The Amazon effect that they're calling it is a trillion-dollar retail industry is suddenly all migrated online, which is simply not true. Lynette says that this is ludicrous, and while some of it is true that the middle class is taking a beating and that people, they have less disposable income than in the past, it's not Amazon's fault, not yet. She says the governments and Amazon would need to like to see this happen, the latter to be able to take charge of whatever they want to do and how they want to do things as far as virtual reality, artificial intelligence. She then goes on to say about Bitcoin. Now, this is what I wanted to read, the main reason I wanted to read this article to you, and cryptocurrencies. And she says what's happening is they're a trap. They've been in development since the 1990s with the approval of the Bank of International Settlements. There you go, BIA, yep, out of Basel, Switzerland. Because the debt-based fiat currency model is on its last legs. She says the derivatives market was launched in the late 90s to keep the dying model afloat while the cryptocurrencies could be developed. I'm going to repeat that. This lady implies, and this is not a bad thought, this is probably true, that the derivatives market was launched intentionally by the central banks in the late 90s to keep the fiat currency money afloat while the cryptocurrencies could be developed. As far as cryptocurrency being decentralized, Lynette says they still have to go through internet nodes, and for people to cash them out, they must go through an exchange. The Chinese government, which seems to be the test lab for every globalist initiative, outlawed crypto exchanges 2 weeks ago, but they have not made blockchain currencies illegal because they want blockchain technology to continue being developed, as this is the future of money. She then goes on to say that decentralization is just a perception management tool to get you to think that you're invisible independent. They even say this in the BIS, the Bank of International Settlements report, and the IMF talk about that we're all lulled into a sense of false security. She says that the cryptos are part of a necessary phase for the transition to central bank-controlled digital currencies, and that once a third of the world's population is involved in things like Bitcoin and cryptos, the time will be ripe to let the dollar die and make the transition into central bankers' new blockchain money. As with all currency resets in the past, she says the new currency will be valued against gold, and at that time we will once again see gold valued properly and no longer manipulated with naked shorts. She sees new regional digital currencies replacing the present-day paper money, with the new world currency becoming the special drawing rights, the SDR, controlled by the International Monetary Fund, the Rothschild banking cartel. She doesn't think that either China or Russia are interested in having their own currency in the world's reserve currency. They just want their currencies in the SDR basket, and that there is no way that the central banks are going to give up and allow anybody else to come in and interfere with their monopoly money. They're not going to do that. And this all starts with the technocrats of the IMF. The best way to be prepared for a major change is to be as independent of the system as possible with food, water, energy, security, ability to barter, wealth preservation, and precious metals. What happened in Greece is a perfect example of what happens when technology takes over systems. It is a small test case that will happen in the United States. And I was there, remember, guys? They can't take more than $300 out of the bank every week in cash. As for when this will happen, she goes, it's already happening. Keep an eye on all of these developments. Lynette says that she expects that things will chug along until it suddenly fast. What happened in China with cryptocurrency recently is a great model of what to expect here. When people are in enough pain from this next crisis, they will be willing to accept the cashless society and the mark of the beast. I added that. That's where this thing is going, guys. And that's why I've been telling you guys for months, and so is Austin, this cryptocurrency thing is a beta test to get the bugs out of it with Bitcoin, and they're going to collapse that Bitcoin exchange in the end, and that you have money in that thing, you're going to lose it. What do you think, Austin?
That's on the head, man. That's what I've been talking about since last year. Everybody was always asking me, you getting into Bitcoin? You getting into Bitcoin? And I could have gotten into it cheap and made money, but I don't like getting involved in crap like that because, A, in my opinion, it's a scam. My statement that I've always held to, and the same thing, Dad, is if I can't physically hold it, if I can't touch it in my hands, if it doesn't have some type of redeemable value to it, like ammunition, food, guns, gold, silver, I'm not involved in it. I really don't. I don't like the stock market issues. It's all pixie dust. It's not real. It doesn't exist. The same thing with Bitcoin that came out with it. When the whole thing came out, they're mining Bitcoins. And I said, you're mining Bitcoins. So you get these processors that mine Bitcoins that run 24/7, use up massive amounts of electricity so they can produce one Bitcoin. And that's what we're calling it now. Is it a cryptocurrency Bitcoin that we trade? And I say, where is the actual labor involved in this? Where is the actual mining of going down in the ground and mining out gold or silver? Where are the core assets that are being used to try and mine this stuff? There are none. It's all using electricity, using electronics. It's all just, again, pixie dust. It's fake. It's not there. It's nothing organic. You can't hold it. It doesn't exist. And that's what they made this model off of. And she's exactly right. Once they get 30% or more of the population involved in Bitcoin or some type of cryptocurrency, they're going to know that their time has come. It's that point to transition over. Right now, still, there's a very, very small amount of the population that actually holds Bitcoin is involved in it, very small amount. There's some of the upper people that have doing it. Some people have gotten into it now, but it still is not nearly as big as they need it to be. Once they can get over 30% of the world population completely accepting of this, what they're going to do is they're going to come in, they're probably going to collapse Bitcoin, they're going to completely shut it down, or they're going to rule it illegal and they're going to buy everybody's stuff like Franklin Delano Roosevelt did with the gold, and they're going to say, okay, Bitcoin's worth $100 a coin now, we'll buy you out of the coin. If you get caught with it, though, it's going to be a felony of 10 years in prison by IRS if you get caught holding it. This is a black market currency. You're not allowed to possess it. Bam. So if you get caught with it, you basically are going to prison, and they will imprison you. I promise you. They will make an example out of somebody with it. Or you can take the $100 or $500 or whatever they're going to make it for, and then they're going to turn around and they're going to say, okay, here's our new digital currency that's backed by Morgan Stanley, that's backed by IMF, that's backed by the Federal Reserve, that's backed by the central banks. This is the strong currency, and it's going to be backed by gold. And of course, where's all this gold been going for the last 40, 50 years that keeps disappearing, that Germany can't get their gold back, Venezuela couldn't get their gold back, China keeps storing up gold wherever they're storing it at, Russia keeps trying to hoard gold. There's gold moving around. Nobody knows where it is. Fort Knox is empty. So whoever has the most gold whenever the music stops is pretty much going to be the winner. And we already know the central banks and the Rothschild and the globalists and the ones that own the Federal Reserve, they've been hoarding this stuff now forever. They've been seizing it from countries like they did in Kuwait unlawfully after we invaded them for no legitimate reason. The same thing we did in Syria. When Gaddafi had mounds of gold that he was storing there that he was going to start try trading as far as and cut out the petrodollar, took all his gold. Oh, Saddam Hussein, he also had a good amount of gold as well in that country. Again, when we invaded Iraq, took all that gold. We continue to do that, and there's no telling either how much gold North Korea has. I don't think they have a lot because they don't have the assets to it, but there's a possibility that they have some type of mining, they have some type of core assets, they have some type of resources that they have in their country that we more than likely want to mine out as well and control the rights to. So there's a good possibility once we attack them, we will invade them, and we will sit there in their country and completely take it over and be basically a they'll turn into some other fiefdom of the United States Rothschild banking cartel, as we use the U.S. military for in almost every country on the planet. I mean, we got them everywhere. And this is what's going on with it now. So, no, Bitcoin, I just had a conversation about this earlier today. I was talking to somebody about silver, and they're asking me about Bitcoin. I said, guys, this is a beta test. They're seeing what they can do, and that's why do you think the price of it has skyrocketed in the last year? They're trying to get everybody sucked into it. They're trying to make it so appealing that everybody thinks they're going to make that fast cash. They're going to buy Bitcoin for $500 or $1,000 a piece, and it's going to be worth $4,000 now. There is no intrinsic value to it. It doesn't exist. It's a digital currency. It is a dream of the globalists to be able to have this cryptocurrency and full circulation and control of the global asset market and the global monetary policy. So that's what they're trying to do now. Stay out of it. It's going to end up being, there's multiple ways it's going to go, as I just said. None of them that I want to be involved in. Stick with gold. Stick with silver. You can always have that core asset that you base everything back on for savings, but don't get involved in this digital currency. There is nothing positive about it, in my opinion.
Interdimensional propulsion systems. Now you think, what in the world's Dad doing now? Interdimensional propulsion systems. I've read repeatedly they use gold for part of the systems, and the gold is used up through that system. And that's one of the reasons that these people who served their master Lucifer have hoarded and stored gold for eons of time, centuries and centuries and centuries. Now, to me, it just seems strange. It's like Austin said, where did all this gold go? Who's got it? Where is it? Is it in vaults in Israel? Is it in vaults in Rome? Is it vaults in the central banks in England? We know it's not in Fort Knox. I mean, all the bank gold that was even in Fort Knox when Reagan had it checked, they told us it didn't belong to the United States. It belonged to the central bankers as collateral against the national debt. So, I mean, so what is all this gold being used for? I mean, you know, a lot of the ancient cultures on this planet that were the pre-Adamic race, which I've talked about repeatedly on the show, said that they were here to mine gold. And apparently these interdimensional entities, or whatever they are, these fallen angels, gold is as precious to them as it is to us. And I just wanted to share that with you guys very quickly, because there's something about that gold medal, and there's something about it that's been something that's been intriguing for eons of time. So we have to ask ourselves the question, you know, where did we ever get the idea that gold was that precious that we were going to store it and keep it? I mean, where do these ideas come from back in antiquity? So just something for you guys to think about. By the way, dramatic decline in male fertility may be a product of modernism. They're saying now that putting cell phones in your pockets, if you're a guy, massively decreases your productivity, or your what's called your viability of the sperm that you have, and that's going to cause a massive increase in reduction of birth rates throughout the planet. It says, this is crazy, it says, irradiating intimate areas with radio frequency or wireless transmission devices like mobile phones, tablets, and laptops has been repeatedly shown to be bad news for reproductive cells and anatomy. Turns out that microwaving the certain body parts can be very, very helpful. Who would have thought? So there are multiple things, including the plastics and the estrogens and also these microwaves that are killing the sperm. So you really have to understand that a lot of times when people can't get pregnant, it's not the wife. A lot of times it's the guy. It's very important that everybody understands that. What I suggest that you do, if you need to bring your testosterone and your sperm levels up, go to our website and get the Alpha Male Stack. It's specifically designed to elevate testosterone and sperm levels. That's something you guys need to understand. It's very, very critical. Cell phones, vaccines, GMO, soy, phthalates, sodium fluoride in the drinking water, all of those things cause a massive reduction in sperm quality, plus deficiencies of zinc and vitamin E. Without enough zinc in your diet or zinc in supplements, it's almost impossible to make a high-quality sperm if you're a guy that'll actually impregnate a woman. So, guys, really important, if you've got infertility issues in your life, make sure you do what I ask you to do on these things and avoid these other things also. What do you think?
Yeah, that's very good tips, because we're seeing that now all across the board where people are having a harder and harder time getting pregnant, and it's on both sides. And yeah, a lot of times the girl's fine in some cases and the guy's having a hard time with it. So you got to make sure you're staying away from a lot of these phytoestrogens and the BPA and the plastic and all these things that are increase your estrogen levels. And that's pretty much why we put together the Alpha Male Stack, to really help out with that base and moderate estrogen and also increase testosterone and essentially provide healthy testicular health with those nutrients and good energy. And also too, speaking of cell phones now, a new study just came out about a month ago, and I touched base on it briefly, but I wanted to kind of go into more detail on it, because a lot of people I'm still seeing a issue with this with younger generation teenagers and a lot of these young kids that are 8, 9, 10 years old with smartphones now. It was funny, I was on the way to the office here, and I was this morning early, and I drove by one of the streets where all the middle schoolers, these are middle schoolers, not high schoolers, middle schoolers that were waiting for the school bus. The school bus usually picks them up at like 8:15 around here, 8:10. So I was driving through, and they were all standing out there, and every single one of them was standing there with their heads down, playing on their phones while they were waiting for the school bus. And I thought, golly, you know, most of the time, I remember back in the day, you know, I didn't ride the school bus, but I remember back in the day, even just, you know, probably 8, 9, 10 years ago when I'd be driving to work or I'd be leaving early, I used to always see kids everywhere around here. The school's right down the road from us. Most of the time, they'd be running up and down the street, chasing each other, you know, doing ridiculous children things and what they do, and none. They're all completely stationary, no idea what's going on, not looking up for a second, not noticing anything in their surrounding area, fixated on their phone. And that article that I talked about was from the San Diego University professor of psychology, and the author was Jean Twenge, and she claimed that smartphone usage is having a radical impact on both the behavior and mental health of United States teenagers. She went on to say rates of teen depression and suicide has also skyrocketed since 2011. She said it's not an exaggeration to describe the I generation as being on the brink of the worst mental health crisis in decades. Much of this deterioration can be traced to their phones. Now, what she didn't say in this article, and this is why I wanted to bring this up, is what they're doing now is They're not looking at the cause and effect and going off everything. What they're doing now is, we see this, we also have the highest amount of pharmaceutical depression medications that have ever been peddled to the youngest generation in history now. I talked about that last month. So what we're having now is a generation that's really depressed, is having really bad mental health issues, and a lot of this is stemming down to the phone usage, literally 7, 8, 9, 10 hours a day on electronics. And so in turn, they're having depression scenarios, so their parents are taking them to their pediatrician or their doctor, and their doctor then is wanting to put them on antidepressants and other medications because they're having issues with that, and that's not even the issue at all. This is something that's really getting bad in this country, and we haven't even begun to see the long-term effects of what it's going to do from a generational standpoint, probably for another 5 to 10 years, when these kids actually hit the workforce, when they start getting married, if they get married, if they start having kids, if they have kids, and they go on to start businesses, be involved in all types of different work options. She went on to say in here, the article is entitled, "Have Smartphones Destroyed a Generation?" And they said a 2007 survey of more than 5,000 American teenagers found that at least 3 out of 4 owned an iPhone. She said they show that teens today spend far less time hanging out with their friends. And this is what she said in the article. Fewer of them have a driver's license, they date less, they have less sex, get less sleep, and are more likely to feel alone than just 6 years ago by a significant statistic now. She went on to say in here, rise of the smartphone and social media has caused an earthquake of magnitude we've never seen before. There's compelling evidence that these devices we've placed in young people's hands are having a profound effect on their lives and making them seriously unhappy. One of the individuals that she interviewed was Athena, a 13-year-old girl. She said, like her peers, Athena is an expert at tuning out her parents so she can focus on her phone. She spent much of her summer keeping up with her friends, but nearly all of it was over text or Snapchat. And I quote, Athena said, I've been on my phone more than I've been with actual people, she said. My bed has like an actual imprint of my body. Today's teens go to fewer parties and spend less time together in person. When they do congregate, they are usually on their phones or documenting what they're doing on Snapchat. Those not invited to come along are keenly aware of it. Accordingly, the number of teens who feel left out has also reached an all-time high across all age groups, as it has the increase of loneliness. The upswing and feeling left out has been swift and significant, and it's been directly linked to the electronic eye generation. So this is something that you guys really have to address if you have kids. They don't need iPhones. If you have to get them a phone, as far as for a safety standpoint, if they're traveling, if they're having ride in a vehicle, if they have something going on at school, get them one of the base flip phones that you can buy on like the T-Mobile plan or the Boost plan. It's like a prepaid one that's like $30 a month, and it has no internet, and you can basically call on it if you need to for an emergency. That's what I always recommend doing, especially for these younger kids. Now, once they get older and they're 17, 18 years old and they want to go buy their own plan, there's not much you can do about that. But at that point, they're going to at least have a pretty good social interaction base and know how to function in society. But these kids now that are 8, 9, 10 years old, that are buried in their smartphones 8, 9, 10 hours a day, this is not healthy. And in my opinion, this has been an overall goal of the globalists from the beginning, hence why they continue to push these new iPhones so fast with newer technology as quickly as they can get it out, and they push it to the younger demographics as quickly as they can, because they want to have this young generation be so wrapped up, as we just talked about in Bitcoin now, once over 30% of the population is involved in Bitcoin or electronic currency, they know that's when they can roll out the digital currency. This younger generation is not even going to understand what buying things with cash is like. They are not going to know anything other than digital currencies, especially with debit and credit cards now becoming so prevalent. Buying things with bills, paper, coinage, they're literally not even going to know how to do so, much less add it up when they get to the counter. It's going to be much easier just to swipe the card or swipe their electronic currency, Bitcoin card, and go on with their way, or use their phone, or transition it right over to the mark of the beast, which a lot of these kids are not even going to have any opposition with because they're going to be so delved in electronics, Dad. But I really wanted to touch base on that because of what I saw going down the road with all those kids buried in their phone this morning.
Thanks, Austin. You're absolutely right. The earthquake swarms in California are actually having effects now. In Yosemite National Park on El Capitan, 100 by 100 foot boulder, the size is like like a 10 by 10, like a 10-story apartment complex, fell from top of El Capitan, broke loose, and somebody was killed from it. So the trembling and the constant, you know, movement of the magma and the unstableness of the land out there is causing massive problems there, even in Yosemite. And it's kind of interesting to me, Austin, because they've been playing a lot about that movie with The Rock that was called San Andreas that came out a couple of years ago. And I mean, it's like on every night here on our cable TV, telling everybody about a potential earthquake that could happen and split the San Andreas Fault. So,
yep.
To me, it's always strange when they start talking about this stuff and they continue to talk about it. And, you know, when this stuff starts happening, you know, like we're running drills on 9/11 about a terrorist strike, you know, on the trade towers. I mean, crazy stuff, or hot planes being hijacked. I mean, so it's strange to me that they're telling us, because they have to kind of tell you what they're planning on doing before they do it. By the way, I don't even know how to say this. That Hugh Hefner is dead. He's the one person that pretty much single-handedly back in the 50s was chosen to lead the country down an entire road of immorality and debauchery with his pornography that he released. And the first model that he had, that he used on his magazine, was Marilyn Monroe. And he has, interestingly enough, bought the crypt space directly beside Marilyn Monroe, and he will have his casket and his body stored beside Marilyn. Sadly for Hugh Hefner, it's time, unless he became born again here very recently that no one really knows about, is done bringing, glorifying himself on this planet. He's basically dead now and on a grease ticket to hell, as far as I'm concerned. He did more to destroy the moral fiber of the United States in his lifetime than any other individual. But he's the one who brought in this entire pornography scourge that started in the United States back in the 50s and now has basically destroyed an entire culture with the filth that people see on the internet. And it could all be tracked back to him bringing it into the mainstream back in the 50s. As far as I'm concerned, good riddance and be gone. Anything to say about that, Austin, or do you want to start on another topic?
No, that's pretty much about sums it up right there. This is another article that was quite unsettling to me today, because I understand exactly how the deep state works and how they like to give people a heads up with a lot of this stuff, as you were just talking about. The FBI director, Christopher Wray, warned Congress yesterday, and this has gone very much unnoticed by a lot of the mainstream media. They're not even touching base on this, which I'm surprised, but again, it's very odd. He warned Congress on Wednesday that terrorist groups now, like ISIS, of course, is back to ISIS now, may soon have the capacity to carry out drone attacks against the United States, and described this as an imminent threat. Here's what he said here, guys. And I'm going to read this, and I'm going to tell you exactly what they're telling you with this. He said, "We do know now that terrorist organizations have an interest in using drones. We've seen that overseas with growing frequency, that I think the expectation of it coming here is growing. I think that they're relatively easy to acquire." No, they're not. "They're relatively easy to operate." No, they're not. "And they're quite difficult to disrupt and monitor." No, you can actually disrupt them quite quickly with a kill switch. They're not that difficult at all, or with a lot of the space-based weapons platforms we have, can drop them right out of the sky. He then went on to say there the terrorists could target American citizens using drones equipped with chemical weapons or small explosives, grenades, and rockets. "We need to prepare for the threat," he said. "Counterterrorism agencies have established teams of intelligent experts now to monitor online and offline, who are fully dedicated to full-time examining the tactics and techniques of the terrorists in possession of these drones." Here's what they're saying now. It's going to be physically impossible for the United States population to figure out if a U.S. drone that flies overhead that drops a bomb on Houston or Chicago or whatever city they want, to be able to link it back to the CIA or the U.S. military, because now we've released a statement saying ISIS has the ability to operate U.S. drones and fly them in U.S. airspace, and there's absolutely nothing we can do about it. We can't even figure out how to track them or shut them down because we're completely incompetent. So you need to watch out because ISIS is going to start bombing the United States with U.S. drones now, and there's nothing we can do about it except try to prepare and then huddle in a corner once they get a hold of them. This right here is exactly what they want to do because this will be the easiest, most effective way to bring out a false flag anywhere in the country and then blame it on the giant boogeyman ISIS and have zero recourse and zero tracking back to the CIA, back to the military, back to the Pentagon, back to anybody at all, even Mossad, because they're going to say, well, there's nothing we could do about it. ISIS got a hold of a drone. We couldn't shut it down. Now they bombed the whole city. Sorry about it. We need to be more careful with it, Dad. I can't believe he had the audacity to release this now and act like the United States military is so inept, we can't figure out how to stop drones from being handled over the United States and operated by terrorists. That completely boggles my mind that he thinks the United States is that stupid, Dad.
Well, you know, quite frankly, the more of a threat from a terrorist group, if there was a true cell that wasn't supported by our military and by the Sabbatai and Kabbalists, which I don't know if there are any of those or not, would be the small drones that you can buy at the local department store that can carry a 2 or 3 pound payload of C4. I mean, that would be a problem. That's a real problem because you have the extended range on some of these things go up to a mile, mile and a half away. You could actually fly it at treetop levels, drop it in and detonate it. Now that would be a problem, but flying a drone at 20, 30, 40,000 feet, that's U.S. military doing that. And they know they're in control of the skies because they're going to show up on every single radar signature out there that there's something flying around dropping bombs. I mean, so you're absolutely right, Austin. If this happens with large drones, there's a problem. Happens with small drones, much more difficult to track, especially if the thing explodes and destroys the drone in the process. And it would be a very cheap way of delivering a very substantial payload in a very easy format. I mean, you could literally fly one out of your car if you had a convertible and you stop at a stop sign, fly the drone straight up and fly wherever you want to fly it and stay in that general area and, you know, sit in the back seat and control it and then end up just letting it go. You could actually do it, launch it from, you could cut a hole in the top of your motorhome or you could put one on top of the motorhome of the RV and you could basically unstrap it and let it fly from there and let it lift off of there and you could sit in the motorhome. Nobody would even see you with the controls. And you could do that. Now, if they were to come out and say something like that, okay, all right. But for a full-blown military drone to be flying over the United States and dropping stuff on us, complete nonsense. In fact, talking about the military, this is from Defense One National Journal. It says the future of the U.S. military is constructing a giant armed nervous system. We're talking Skynet here from the Terminator movies, in which every single weapons platform is interconnected. Leaders of the Air Force, Navy, Army, and Marines are converging on the vision of a future military connecting every military asset on the global battlefield. That means everything from an F-35 jet to the destroyers on the sea to the armor of the tanks crawling over the land to the multiplying devices in every troop's pockets, every weapon, vehicle, device connected, sharing data, constantly aware of the presence and state of every other node in a truly global network, the effect an unimaginably large military nervous system armed with the world's most sophisticated weaponry. This is some scary stuff, guys. I'm not making this up. I mean, what would the world look like if we connected what we have in that way? It would, if we looked at the world through a lens of a network as opposed to individual platforms, electronic jamming shared immediately, avoided automatically. Every 3 minutes a mobility aircraft takes off somewhere on the planet. Platforms are nodes in a network, the Air Force chief said. The idea borrows from the network-centric warfare concept that seized the military imagination more than a decade ago, but what leaders are doing today is larger by orders of magnitude. It's less a strategy for integrating multiple networks into corporations more efficiently than a plan to switch everything and stitch everything to networks within networks into a single web. Now we'll go again. I'm saying this, controlled by the AI. The purpose, better coordinated, faster, and more lethal operations in air, land, sea, space, and cyberspace. Well, how about the AI that we connect this thing to coordinate it, gets hacked off because he doesn't like human beings, gets hacked off because he doesn't like Christians in a certain part of the country, or gets hacked off that he just wants to get rid of all Christians, or how about this, he gets hacked off, he wants to get rid of everybody with over an 80 IQ, how about he just gets hacked off about that, and they start dropping ordnance all over the planet to do this. Guys, this is a real problem because this AI is going to be given full autonomy once they connect into the D-Wave computers. This is not okay. This is not all right with me. And we need to do everything we possibly can to get the word out put a stop to this nonsense. This goes all the way from the Tesla cars to the autonomous cars to the autonomous trucks. All of this stuff being controlled through one major control grid. By what? I want to ask you, by what? You don't have a person controlling all this. You've got this giant artificial intelligence connected interdimensionally to Lucifer that's going to be running everything. This is complete and total nuts. Back to what it was in Genesis chapter 6, when every thought of every man was evil all the time. Austin, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you just nailed it on the head. That's exactly right. Controlled by what? And I mean, it's the same goes back. I mean, even though it was a movie, it really starts begging the question now, like it said, and I was in the first Terminator. That's where all this comes down to, is Skynet. They tried to shut down Skynet, and it launches a counterstrike, nuclear weapons all over the country, and starts blowing up continents. You can't just start giving AI the ability to make decisions with literally hundreds of thousands of ordnance and weapons and aircrafts all over the planet. This is not a good way to go. And the only reason it's going this way is because it's the bidding of the globalists that want to put this essentially back in the hands of the satanic agenda and the Nephilim and everybody that started this whole thing in the beginning in Genesis chapter 6 to try and completely dissolve the human race is what it is and bring out a new generation, a new DNA, like they tried to do. I mean, that's why they said Noah was the only, him and his own family were the only ones that basically God could save because everybody else had been corrupted. That's what they're trying to do with this whole AI, tie everything in with the giant grid that controls everything. Same thing why they're doing 5G, same thing why they're doing the autonomous vehicles now that they want to connect everywhere, same thing why they're doing this with the military. It's all happening at once, guys. You just got to look out at it. You got to see what's going on and open your eyes and understand what it is. And exactly as Dad just said, wake everybody up and make people oppose this stuff and stop being so happy about it as far as embracing it. We don't need to be embracing this stuff at all. And the more people that buy this crap, like simply like the Amazon Echo with Alexa, stop buying the crap. If people knew what this stuff does and it spies on you 24/7 and it builds a database on you and it collects all of your information and every word you say and stores it in the database, maybe people would realize this probably isn't the best thing to have in your house listening to your conversations 24/7. That's just me. But that's the thing. We can't support this stuff and we can't buy it. The more people that rush out and want to buy these iPhone 10s that are total facial recognition software, there's no buttons on them, there's no fingerprint option on them, it's all fake facial recognition software. If everybody started waking up in the United States and said, you know what, this is a bit too Skynet for me, I'm really not about this, I'm not going to buy the Generation X, and all of a sudden they released it and the sales went through the floor, completely crashed, they would say, they're not ready for this yet. Maybe we need to hold off. Maybe we don't need to go this route. That's just me on it, Dad. But apparently a lot of people don't share my beliefs on it. They're so quick to take the new and quickest our artificial technology spine aspects of everything and hand them out as quickly as possible. Also, too, another health study just came out now that found that most people that are now being recommended cholesterol-lowering medications, they're now trying to push statins as hardly as they can to people that they say have disadvantaged populations that are essentially, according to their findings now from Toronto St. Michael's Hospital, did an examining data from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, first study to look at the socioeconomic and racial backgrounds of those who are now being heavily recommended to use statins. And according to their findings now, of African Americans are now four times more likely to fall under the new recommendations to take these statins, while those whose education did not extend past high school are twice as more likely to be recommended the drugs as those who finished college. As you guys already know, the statins, there's been numerous studies. They've already released now that the evidence, there's no evidence that statins actually improve any type of heart health at all. There's absolutely nothing that shows any type of long-term health benefits, even after a heart attack. They've shown now that 40% of people that take statins have debilitating muscle pain, and older women who take statins have an almost 50% higher chance of developing type 2 diabetes. So what they're doing now is they're massively trying to push it on the basically the population that has a lower education or a population that does not have the informed ability that knows about these statins to get as many people as they can on them as quickly as possible, because they really, really, really want to get the population dumbed down. And these statins do an incredibly good job at that. Almost everybody I've talked to that's been on statins for years and years on end always has issues with memories. I mean, it's across the board. Almost everybody that I talk to has issues with memory, and that's exactly what they're trying to do now with these statins. And it's the easiest way to get that into the hands of everybody now is to push them on to everybody that doesn't have the ability to do the research. That's why here at Health Masters, we give you this info. That's why on this show, we give you this info. We do the best we can to inform everybody about the truth of what's really going on with the pharmaceutical and the vaccine industry, Deb.
That's right, Austin. By the way, Puerto Rico is still a disaster. I had a friend of mine, he was running a jet down there back and forth, his own private plane, and he ended up blowing a doggone tire on the runway because of all the debris on the runway, and now he can't get the plane out of Puerto Rico because there's no place down there to fix it because everything's shut down. He said the plane's probably going to be sitting down there broken down for months because he can't get the strut x-rayed and have the tire replaced. He can't just put a new tire on. You have to x-ray the strut to make sure that's going to be safe to land again. So he's in a pickle because his aircraft is stuck down there. Hopefully it doesn't get vandalized. And they were actually charging, $2,000 or $3,000, $5,000 or $6,000 a person to fly them up to Tampa. But they were bringing like 10 or 12 people in there one time. They're making $40,000-$50,000 a run. But they decided it's not worth the damage to the airplanes. That's why the major airlines are staying away from Puerto Rico, which is still an absolute disaster. Maduro, president of Venezuela, is now telling his military to be prepared for a full-blown invasion by the United States. And he's probably right. I don't think he's wrong on that one whatsoever. He's telling everybody to get prepared because the Trump military generals and the complex are coming to cripple and take over Venezuela, which we have fully expected for a long time. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for getting your multiple vitamins from us. Thank you for supporting Health Masters, and thank you for praying for us. Thank you for getting all of your nutritional supplies from us. You guys mean a lot to us. I love you guys. I appreciate you. I'll go ahead and write the summary, Austin. I'll go ahead and close. I'll let you close, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Absolutely, man. We appreciate it. Thank you for all the support, guys, and all the emails. I got a lot of emails in overnight, so we appreciate all that support. Also, be sure to check out the website out at healthmasters.com if you guys need anything. The GHI Cleanse is the one, the product that won for Product of the Week. That's on sale on the website at the healthmasters.com. And also, too, we've been selling a ton of it, and I'm glad because a lot of people are liking it. Our local beef jerky, our New Zealand grass-fed beef, Toby's Beef Jerky, has been selling awesome. I got more on order, a whole fresh batch coming in for you guys. Brand new that he just made this week. They're local. They're over there in Dade City, Florida, so we love supporting them, and they make a really, really good product. Non-GMO, New Zealand grass-fed beef, no MSG, no artificial flavors, no sugars, nothing on it. Unbelievably clean product. So if you guys want to check that out, the website, it's under Beef Jerky New Zealand Grass-Fed Beef on the website at healthmasters.com. Really, really clean product. I use it all the time as a little backup snack when I want to add some protein in and I don't have any food with me. So be sure to check that out. If you guys need anything, give us a call, 1-800-726-1834. You guys have a blessed, safe night, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow as always.